Celebrate your birthday today, celebrate. Happy birthday, hey, celebrate.
Madonna alle.
Madonna.
Hesse qaadi jirtay xabad kamid aha.
Way.
Marka heestaas maxay ahayd? Hesse oran jirtay. Holiday. Celebrate. It was church holiday. Hanate in this set celebrate.
I bet you're wondering, what's with the happy birthday? And who are we singing to? Well, it is January 1st. And for a lot of Somalis across the world, it might just be your B-Day. Or at least one of your family members. Welcome to Unfinished, the podcast where we go through the journey called life as we piece brick by brick together. Join me, the Nomad, and Toronto's finest, Bella with two L's, and a young king in the making, Smooth Operator. On today's episode, we're going to break down growing up Somali in Toronto.
Bella with two L's coming at you guys. I'm very excited today because you guys are in for one heck of a ride. So we're gonna celebrate.
Hey,
this could be all night.
Hey, celebrate.
Okay, take it smooth.
Okay. So you know this is smooth coming in. You feel me? We're not gonna be saying smooth operator. That's a lot of words. We're gonna go smooth.
That's a long.
You know what I mean? So this is our first episode. We're coming live to you, January 1st, 2021. So we got to start.
We made it, guys. We made it.
Woo! We made it through 2020. And we got to give a special birthday shout out to all the Halimas, to all the Farahs. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you. Hey, so there's a lot of 50 Cent in the club going on. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's a lot of music being played. It's a celebration. We're going to have a good time. Welcome to the podcast. Let's get started.
Let's go.
Let's do it.
Let's break down, what does it mean to be Somali? In my personal experience, telling someone that I'm from Somali and getting that confused look, that's being Somali. Waking up, having anjera for breakfast.
That's being Somali.
You know, rice with the banana.
That's being Somali.
I am the captain now. So let's just get into what is Somali. So from my personal experience, I didn't really understand what it meant to be Somali growing up. I had a couple incidences growing up in an area where it's predominantly Caribbean and being the outsider. I'm pretty sure you guys all experienced that too. So,
facts.
What does it mean to be Somali for you guys?
I felt it took a long time for me actually to kind of get in tune with my Somali Nomo, I would say. I lived between two different worlds. So if you know me, I was born back home and I came to Canada 95. Southside region, you know, we came through and there was probably, less than five Somali families there. And I came with a couple of older siblings that already kind of, they were Somali Nimo to their Dimo already. I was 5 years old and they were in their teens. And so they've already kind of grasped who they were and they weren't going to let up for anybody. And so when I walked into Regent Park, I didn't know myself. I didn't know if I would fit in with the Somali kids, if I would fit in with the black kids. I was just trying to, you know, find a room to kind of grow and be myself. And I felt at a very young age that I was kind of an outcast because I was not black enough for the black kids. I don't want to step on anybody's toes, but growing up, you're going to know that I'm pretty sure a lot of Somali people felt that they weren't black only because they were in Caribbean. So just want to let you know, I am black. I consider myself black. I identify as black. And I like me some rice and peas, so...
ain't even mad at you.
You know, so I feel like growing up, I was a little bit one foot in and one foot out. So I'll tell you guys a little bit more about that as we go along. Well, smooth, take it from there, homie.
It's all good. So for me, I would say I'm similar to Bella. You know, I wasn't born here. I was born in Europe. And I was born in Germany. Then I came off a plane straight to Dixon. So whoa. I landed in Hamburg.
Culture shock. I'd say the world.
No, it might be the world. It's infamous.
Shout-outs to Dixon.
Shout-out to Dixon. So right away, I had to... I experienced Somali culture in my face everywhere.
Yeah.
Dixon's like the only place where you can get on an elevator, see a Somali mom in her bati carrying ambola.
Ooh.
In the elevator, live. She's just going about her day, going to her homie's house, and that's regular. So what does being Somali mean to me? For me, it means, I guess it means a family. Like, being Somali is like you have family all over the world.
Of course.
So you're connected throughout the world. If you see another Somali anywhere in this world, like, your heart just shines, and you guys, your energy just, it's like you met a family member again.
Yeah.
You don't even have to know them. You can have a random conversation with them and become friends with a Somali person anywhere in this world.
But sometimes I wish, like, I would tell my father, like, I wish that he would take us to a neighborhood like Dixon when we first grew up, because when you come into a Caribbean neighborhood predominantly, and you don't fit in with the Bangladesh kids, and you don't fit in with the Jamaicans, it's like you have to make your own kind of angle.
Yeah.
And you always have to prove yourself. So I feel like even when I used to hear about places like Dixon, I was like, oh, there's people like me somewhere.
Yeah.
And they're holding their fort down.
Yeah.
But growing up in Region 95 until the 2000s, it was survival mode for a lot of us Somalis. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until I went to high school that I stopped proving myself. Like, I felt like I held myself down for so long that, okay, you know what? Oh, the Somali kids, they are cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they are black, I guess. Or you are from Africa, you know? And so I feel like the early 90s, the Somalis coming into Canada or the neighborhoods where there were not enough Somalis, I feel like we broke a lot of barriers for the kids to come. Because now my nieces are growing up in the same exact neighborhood with a different perspective.
Mm.
And I feel like they owe me.
They definitely do.
I had a lot of beatings. I won some, I lost some. You don't always win some. But you know what? Somali is to be resilient.
Yeah.
Facts.
10 toes down.
Always.
You know, like, I had a similar experience to you, Bella, with two L's.
Bella with two L's.
Don't forget the two L's.
Bella with two L's, because we don't take L's.
Yeah.
Okay,
hey.
So I went to a school where it's like 95% Caribbean. There was maybe three other Somali people in the entire school, and it was predominantly Caribbean. And I have a funny story for you guys. So
let's hear it.
When I first started in grade 9, these guys tell me that we're going to be playing outside later after school. So I go with a bunch of guys. Maybe there was 8 of us. We go to the basketball court. We start playing. And then after about like half an hour, they ask me, so where are you from? And I was like, I'm from Ottawa. They're like, no, your background. And I was like, I'm from Somalia. And you guys will never believe their reaction.
What did they say?
They said, ew.
Okay.
That shot me in the heart. And the funniest part about this story is, there was a Somali guy with them.
Homie ain't told himself.
It be them ones. It be your own sometimes. It be your own sometimes.
That was my first experience. And I was shocked. And I was like, aren't you Somali? And he was like, I'm from Kenya.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
But the funny and the great part about that was, today we are still close friends, and I do not let him live it down.
You let him know, brother.
Every single time I let him know.
You got it.
So tell me about any experiences when you were younger where you had to overcome other people's opinions about being Somali.
Overcome other people's opinions?
Yeah, you know, like, being Somali is a little bit different in a sense where you're kind of ostracized from the black community because other black people are going to. I remember when I was younger, you'll see Somali girls being harassed because they got soft hair, mm-hmm. they're beautiful, they look different, they got a beautiful facial features. I'll say, I gotta give a shout out to Somali women. They are by far the most beautiful women in the world. And I felt like growing up, I seen a lot of Somali girls having to fight just to be normalized because they were different. And I'm wondering, did you have that experience yourself?
Honestly, that you take me to my next point. A lot of the fights came from not being black enough because you didn't look like you were black, right? And yeah. there's no way to look black, yeah. right? Black is beautiful in all shades and all skin complexions yeah. and all types of hair, you know? And I think it was the idea of you being inferior to somebody because they didn't know who you are, where you came from, and they wanted to box you into what they thought of you.
Yeah.
So I had a problem because they always would say, oh, you're Pakistani. And I'm like, it's because I'm wearing a hijab. And I'm like, I'm not Pakistani. And there's nothing wrong with being Pakistani.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I'm not Pakistani. But I would always say that I had kind of, I would say, a completely different experience of being Somali in Regent Park than the average Somali girl, I would say.
Definitely, yeah.
Only because there's one, like, main elementary school, and then there's one outside of the neighborhood. I had to go to the inner neighborhood school because it was in my district and it was walkable distance, and my father was not going 6 blocks to take me to a safer elementary school. Okay, so half the girls I grew up with didn't even go to my elementary school. I only met them like after grade 8. Yeah. So imagine, it's already 6 families and now only 3 of the families go to that dangerous elementary school with you. And so my fight was completely more different, and I feel like it kind of shaped me better because I have tougher skin, I think, a little bit, yeah, than most of the girls that were coming out of my neighborhood because they were very sheltered. Again, growing up with a single father is completely different than growing up in a two-parent household.
Definitely.
Because the dad might be working, but the mother is going to make sure the kids are coming from school straight to home, not going, like, you know. But me, I had a little bit more leeway outside. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As people would say, I kind of made my own decisions and stuff. So I don't want to just be going in circles about this, but I had a more interaction with the kids in the community, and I was tested more.
Of course.
So things like you were saying how girls used to be attacked for no reason. I remember going to day camp one day, and I was wearing a sweater that had a logo on it. So the girl, and she was like, why are you wearing that sweater? And I was like, oh, I'm thinking, okay, this neighborhood, you know, we're Bloods, so maybe I'm wearing like the wrong color. And I'm like, oh, what? Is it the wrong color? Should I change it? And she was like, no, look what's on it. And I said, what's on it? It said cutie. And she was, but you're not cute, you're Somali.
Wow. That's pity.
And then I was like, I was like, I'm very cute, first of all. I ain't laying up for nobody.
Facts.
And then I guess the kids are like, oh my God, she's talking back. And I learned more that the more you defend yourself and you're resilient and you're, you know, our parents always tell us, it's good to hug and be somebody and be strong and confident. And you get this kind of reassurance in Somali households, and then you have to go and fight the world with it.
Yeah.
And I feel like time and time when I was tested, I tried to remember what my father taught me at home, is that you come from a very, very rich culture,
mm-hmm.
rich background, and we don't let up for nobody. And that's, and I took that with me every single day going to the school, and alhamdulillah, I survived it. And that would be my experience. Mr. Smooth, take it from there. Were you cute enough for them?
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie to you. That's Shekakala like us. You feel me? But for me, I feel like my early memory of being criticized for it is my aunt was living in the Rexdale area.
Yeah.
So I always loved going to her house because she has my cousins, and my cousins are my age. So I would go there any chance I got. So any weekend, any time off, any holidays, I would run to her house because there's people my age.
Of course.
I kick it with them, my homies, my guys, you know? I went over to her house, And remember, I told you I grew up in Dixon, so I only grew up around Somalis.
Yep, welcome to Rexdale.
I don't know anything about
regions
this
exactly
place.
Like Rexdale.
Rexdale, I don't know anything about it. So I come there, and I'm thinking every kid is a kid. So I'm at a basketball court in my aunt's neighborhood, and I'm playing basketball. It's me and a little Jamaican boy.
Yeah.
So we're playing basketball. We're playing basketball.
Big ups to my Yardies.
Yeah, come on. You know, they got some real people over there.
100%.
You know what I mean? Free world boss. You know what time it is. You know what time it is. But so we're playing basketball, and he trips me. That happens. It's part of the game. It happens when you play the game. It gets a little physical. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So whatever. So he trips me. So when he trips me, and I think nothing of it, he says, "Yeah, stay the hell down." And I'm like, whoa, what is that all about?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? He's like, yeah. So then I look, and I guess it's an older guy in the neighborhood sitting there. So I think he's trying to show off at this point.
Yeah.
Right? And he sees me. I'm not going to lie to you. Back then, I was the biggest guy in the world. I'm Somali.
Yeah.
So I would say 60, 70 pounds, soaking wet. You know what I mean? On a good day, I'll touch 80, but I'm bones, I'm walking bones. So he thought, oh, because of that, he could punk me. And there wasn't like a lot of people standing up to people. But I just came from Dixon. So all I know is, ain't nobody bigger than me. Ain't nobody stronger than me. Ain't nobody tougher than me.
Right.
You bleed, I bleed.
Of course.
All I know. So obviously I stepped up, I said, what's wrong with you? Did it? He started talking. We got into a fight. We got into a old school fight. We threw the hands. I beat his ass. I go home. I go to my aunt's house. She sees me come in the house. There's blood on my leg.
Oh my
but
God.
The blood on my leg is from falling when he tripped me.
Of course.
So I'm like, oh, Habrir, can I get, so that's auntie. So I'm like, can I get some band-aid? She's like, what happened?
Yeah.
I said, nothing. I fell. Obviously I was hiding that I beat somebody's ass and we fought. The truth was, I did fall. That blood wasn't from him. So boom, get the band-aid, put on the band-aid, you know.
So your first fight was just
because so I'm thinking, no,
he just tried you.
Yeah, literally, he just tried to punk me. So I'm like, all right, whatever. So now, I hear knocking at my aunt's door. I'm like, what? Who's knocking? My cousins are outside. I'm inside. My aunt's inside. My uncle's inside. Nobody's not home. So I'm like, who's knocking? It's that same kid. Knocks the door. And my aunt goes, oh my God, there is a black kid in front of my house. What's going on? And then obviously...
Culture shock?
Somalis, we are very stereotypical.
Yeah.
So she's thinking, danger, danger, danger. Right? So she thinks he's going to... I'm like, what's going on?
Stranger danger?
I come to the door. I said, what do you want? He's like, I want to fight. I said, oh, you want to fight? I can do that. No problem. Let me get my shoes.
Yeah.
We can do that. But my aunt... She's saying, oh my God, don't fight him. He's going to shoot you. What? So now they're putting these fears and these things into your brain. But he's a kid and I'm a kid.
Of course.
So he's thinking we're going to throw hands and I'm thinking we're going to throw hands. But our parents, me and Somali, don't know anything about the black culture or anything about them as a people.
Yeah.
So there's a certain ignorance to it. But I didn't have that ignorance because... I saw him just as I saw myself, another kid.
No, but I think sometimes that comes with protection and things that our parents know. See, many of the times that I used to get into these altercations, I was never afraid. And I kept getting stronger and stronger as my opponents kept getting like more and more. But I noticed that then the aggression turned into severe violence with weapon. Because sometimes... As Somali, if I fight a Somali girl, at the end of the day, we're Muslim. We know we have parents, we come from the same cultural norms. We know that at some point, this violence is going to end. Other ethnic backgrounds or the people that I grew up with, or the Caribbean community, it's like there's no limit. And sometimes it comes from that you don't want the Malis to be superior towards you, so you always have to have them, like, scare them a little bit, right? So the fighting turns into a violence that's never going to end until somebody either, like, bloods is shed or something like that. So I get why you're a Somali mother, they don't want that to escalate to a different type of violence. You get it? So our parents were kind of trying to shelter us for a while. Even in the community, when I was fighting a lot, I started getting a name in the neighborhood. Like the Somali girl, she chilled with so much modus that she became one of them. Because the girls in my neighborhood, they weren't fighting like that. They were going to Duxie, they were going to Homburg. They were very sheltered. And so, which is a good thing, but sometimes it becomes a bad thing in the long run. I feel like if you're too sheltered in this world, you're going to get shattered too easily.
Definitely.
Like, and I feel, sometimes you got to get your hands a little bit dirty.
Well, and I feel like that also hindered our growth and our confidence. Mm-hmm. Do you feel me? Because now, if every day someone's telling you, this person's stronger than you, this person, they're putting certain fear in you.
Yeah.
And now when you go out into the world, like, you're not going to be yourself because you're always thinking in the back of your head, this might happen to me. But it's based on things they don't know. My parents never lived it.
I'm really with that. Part of what he's saying is when you instill fear into kids, they start kind of acting out the fear.
Yeah.
Every day. It goes with them for a long time, which is so true, because once I got to high school, I became this fearless kid, in a sense, which was working well for me, but I was instilling this aggressiveness on the other Somali girls. Like, I was literally telling them, man, look, they can't do nothing to us. Like, I kept trying to, like, using violence, because violence is all I knew coming out of this environment. And some people wanted to choose the positive, like
a different direction.
And a lot of my friendships kind of fell apart later on as I grew up in life, because I always thought, if you don't fight, then you don't have my back. And some people are just not violent people.
That is true. Yeah.
You know, and Somalia is, we have this thing we put on people that they have to be kind of exactly like you. Like, you have to be a warrior just like you, because I was willing to. Oh, you're talking to Asha? If I don't even know Asha, I'm still like, well, I'll be in night school and I don't even know this girl. And I'm like, Abai, she's messing with you? All right, it's cool. It's all love. Bananka, you know? And I noticed I was saving so much people growing up and no one was coming to save me. Bella with two L's. You know? No one was coming to save me. So I thought, in the long run, some politics is not your politics. But you could defend somebody. But it was in my nature. And I kind of have to thank the kids in the neighborhood for that, the Caribbean kids, because they instilled that in me, like, wallahi, because if I grew up being so sheltered, I'd be a little bit too afraid to speak out. How many times that I'd be almost in the brink of getting jumped and a girl would be beside me and she'd be like, Abai, this is not me. And I'm like, it's about to be you today. Like, get up. Like, you know, it's about to be you today. And I guess being Somali Nima is like having each other's back no matter what. I got to a point where even at my adult age, wallahi, if I see a Somali guy and I feel like he's in a sticky one, he could be from anywhere. I'd be like, Abu, are you okay? And I always get myself into shit for that. My friends in the car, like, I would literally pull over, Abu, are you okay? And she's like, every day you want to act like you're okay. Are you the citizen? I mean, sorry, are you like the police for the, like, but it's my nature to make sure that my Somali brother is okay in any circumstances.
You know, like, the Somali culture has a lot of mahmas. And one of the mahmas, I'm going to translate it in English for you guys, is do not speak for someone who is present. So this is a very valuable life lesson, like Bella just said in her story, that you can fight for people all you want, but if they're not willing to stand up for themselves or speak up for themselves, you're only going to get yourself in trouble.
Absolutely.
And in life, I feel like we go through life with different experiences, and everybody has different views on life, and there's no actual right or wrong in life. There's only choices. So you gotta always remember that no matter what situation you are in today, that does not define you. It does not define you. Whatever you go through, it's not the end of the world, right? And Somali Nimo itself is being resilient, like you guys said earlier.
Being unique and feeling comfort in your uniqueness. But it took a long time to feel comfortable in my uniqueness. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, why can't you come outside on Saturday and Sunday? And why do you go to this Islamic school for 3 hours of your weekend? Who does that? Mm. And I was like, it's called Duxie. What the hell is that?
Yeah.
Like, it's like constantly having to speak about your own cultural norms to people that don't understand or don't want to understand.
Yeah.
Okay? And then now you hear kids say, the kids in my neighborhood are becoming Muslim in a rate that you won't imagine.
And that's because of Somali people.
And it's because of Somali people. Wallahi, I have homies that say that all the time. It's not, they said the deen, obviously they have to learn the deen in the long run, but they said it's how you guys think together.
Yeah.
It's how your parents are so, after a while, the parents said, you know, these little kids, wallahi, it's just that I think after a few years, the parents started normalizing this, normalizing the idea that there's your kid, their kids are gonna always be friends with other ethnic backgrounds, and they started letting them in the houses, coming to our birthday parties. Well, by the time I was like 16, 17, my friends that were these little friends, they could come over to the house, and my parents would be like, why are you hanging around with these people? We broke a lot of different barriers for even for our parents, and now our parents started looking at these kids as normal
kids.
Yeah. Come to the house, eat here, you can eat with us, your parents are not home, come
it,
stay, you know what I'm trying to say?
True.
It took a while to do that.
No, it did. Because they didn't, the one thing that, like, the main thing I feel like that's forgotten is that we're children, right?
Yeah.
And they're children. Uh-huh. So at the same time how our parents are molding us, these kids are being molded too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you can't be trying to stop me from chilling with a Caribbean kid because you think he's gonna
influence
he me. Or she's gonna influence me in a way that you think is negative. You gotta remember, that's a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So we're both being influenced.
Yeah.
So whatever I'm doing is influencing him or her, and whatever they're doing is influencing me as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm showing them that I come from a good family, that my mom's a good lady, that she's feeding them when they're hungry,
absolutely,
that she's taking care of them, that builds more love and that builds more continuity within everything in life.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's how this Somali, being Somali, has become cooler. Because
super cool.
Now it's the cool thing to be Somali. It's the cool thing to know Somali words.
Up to
come on, Asuka. Like you have them running around the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But that was happening. But those seeds were laid a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
When I feel like our generation
we have
first
to make that
started.
Specific.
Yeah, well, our generation first 90 started.
90 to 95,
talking,
89,
like,
87.
We started talking with people outside of our ethnicity and said, "Whoa, they're cool."
Yeah.
There's cool people outside of Somalis.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
I love my Jamaican friends.
They're
hella cool.
Me too.
Love
my homies.
Their culture is very...
Like, we can all... I can honestly say everybody has a bunch of friends from different ethnicities. Forget being just Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
Forget being...
Indian, anything.
And Indian, anything. We all have friends of different ethnic backgrounds that benefited us and taught us lessons in life.
I agree, and like I feel like for our parents' generation, I wouldn't hold anything against them. I feel
absolutely.
Like they went through way harder hardships
of
than
course.
Us. They fled from war. They are more special than us in a sense, because they imagine having to. Actually, I'm going to tell you guys a story about my mom's experience coming to Canada, which is really shocking. When I look back on it. So I want you guys to imagine my mom came to Canada at the age of 23 with three kids and nobody else. My father sent her on a vacation to New York in, I think it was 1987. And my mom's going to New York just thinking, I'm going on vacation. I'm going to go back. Everything's okay. And then my father told the family we were staying with to rip up the tickets. And now she's stuck in New York, three kids, doesn't know what she's going to do. So my father connected her with a family member in Ottawa. I told her, you're going to go to Ottawa. My mom doesn't speak English. She got three little kids and a toddler. Me, I was just a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And two older sisters, they're just like a year or 2 years apart. So she has to get to Ottawa from New York City. So the family puts her on a Greyhound. She ends up in Toronto. And by the time she gets to Toronto, it's, I think it's 1 a.m. and all the buses are done. She's stuck literally at the Greyhound station downtown in Toronto. No English, no idea where she is. And she's crying inside the bus shelter. And you know what happens? She sees a Somali man. A young guy, in his 30s, and she starts smiling.
Mm.
And the guy asks her, what are you doing here? And she tells him that, she tells him the whole story. And he says, you know what? Come with me. I'm going to take you to my apartment. And he took us to his apartment. And he had roommates at the time, you know, young Scabalas. Guy. So he kicks everybody out. And he cleans up the house. He gives us the apartment. And he leaves. They all stay in a hotel. The next morning comes, we're ready to go. He takes us back to the bus shelter, helps us out, puts us on a bus, sends us on our way to Ottawa, and we go back. We move to Ottawa anyways, and we end up living our life, whatever. And every time I hear my mom tell this story, she cries because she doesn't know what his tribe is. She doesn't know anything about him. This is what profound. Somali Nimmo is.
Profound.
And that's the beauty of being Somali. I feel that we should embrace that fact that anywhere you are in the world, you're like a MasterCard. You're accepted everywhere.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that was beautiful.
Shout out to that man.
Shout out to that man.
If you're listening, if somehow, some way you're listening to this podcast, you know, we appreciate you.
Definitely.
We appreciate you.
I feel like that was just so profound to listen to. And again, being Somali is more than just being aggressively loud and wanting to be the best at everything in life. Like, I feel like it's stories like that that need to be more heard. I feel like a lot of what's going on in the community now overshadows all the things that we've accomplished in our lives.
Yeah.
And coming to this country and opening up all these restaurants and these businesses that go on for years because we are the main consumers and we make sure that we prosper as a community. I feel like all of that gets overlooked by all the chaos that's happening in our community now. Mm. And it's stories like that that is so profound. And I want to touch base on that only because I feel like something very similar like that happened to me and how I got here in my journey. So on our way from Somalia to Canada, my mom passed away in the journey. So we flee the civil war in 92. We're in Djibouti now. So it's me and two of my other siblings and my mother. My dad already took the rest of them to Italy. So everybody was migrating to Italy. There was a huge population of Somali people, relatives and stuff that were already in Italy. I only had one aunt in Ottawa also. And so on our way here, my mom had... She had a tumor-like issue on her back, and they were like, oh, Italy has better doctors. Don't even try to stop in Djibouti. Just make your way to Italy. And then when we got to Djibouti, it kind of got worse, and she had to go into immediate surgery, and she passed away, in Djibouti. And so now I'm just in a house with a bunch of other Somalis that fled civil war, and my two siblings. So the oldest at that point is 7, 5, and a newborn. And so the people in the house was like, what are we going to do with these kids? Like, they're calling the father. My father has 3 other kids in Italy. So he's like, okay, I'll bring them there. And I'll come to pick the kids up. Just take care of them while I get there. Because it's not easy to leave younger kids and then travel back and stuff. So they fed us, took care of us, did everything. The family was on their way to Ottawa. So she was like, you know what? We're going as refugees to Ottawa. If the aunt could obviously meet us in Ottawa, we'll take them straight to Canada. You just take care of the kids in Italy, and we'll take them with us, these 3 kids. And it was another complete stranger staying in a 3-bedroom household with almost 5 families. You know, and it's so profound to see that Somali people were built different when it comes to
taking care
of each other. Yeah. I feel like, again, how you said our parents got tested so much more than we've ever could be tested.
Yeah.
Like with hunger, loss of wealth, because obviously these people are people that obviously had careers and a life. They didn't picture one day just getting up and coming to a country that they feel they have no place in, right?
They didn't even know the language.
And so I ended up without my mother, but coming fleeing from a country with a complete stranger, and my father having never met this family, and trusting them with 3 of your children.
I feel like Somalis have 1 degree of separation. Like anywhere you go in the world, if you talk to a Somali person, you'll figure out somebody that they know.
Absolutely. Like, and it's crazy. Like, it could be literally anywhere in this world.
I don't know if I want to say it's the dean, because I always want to say it is the dean. The dean puts so much pressure on being the backbone of your neighbor. Mm-hmm. And before you could even be the backbone of your neighbor, you need to be the backbone of your kin, right? Mm-hmm. And there's so much about our dean that not forces you, but that influences us to be better people. And you, the only way you could be better people is if you're of use to other people, right?
Yeah.
So I would want to say it's definitely the deen aspect of it, and then maybe more of our dakhan to be that,
our culture.
Because everybody's Muslim, but I'm only speaking for our experience, because Somali people, wallahi, they do a lot when it comes to
when it comes to when you're down bad, a Somali will help you just because you're Somali.
Yeah.
Like, they're not helping you for a benefit, they're not helping you for anything, just because the simple fact that you're Somali. And they feel like you guys are the same. They're just going to go out of their way to help.
And I feel like they do that with everybody. I feel like for Somalis, like, either you love us or you hate us. There's no in between.
There's no in between.
You know? Yeah, you rock with us or you don't.
You don't rock with us. Because, like, Somalis are very, very opinionated. Mm-hmm. And I love that about it. Me, personally, I never thought about Somali culture. I used to be like, ew. Anytime somebody would speak Somali to me, I did not understand anything.
Are you a fob?
Yeah, that's my reaction. And you know, like, I feel like Canadians have that that reputation of being thinking that they are not interested in the culture itself. And I'll be honest with you, I had that experience growing up where I didn't want to hear it. I don't want to know anything about it. I was living in an ignorant sense. And for 11 years, my mom was trying to convince me to go back home. 11 years. This is insane, right? 11 years. Every year, she's telling me, go back home. Go back home. I'm telling her, get out of here. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. So I finally went back home in 2017. And I was supposed to be there for 1 month. I ended up staying for 2.5 years. That's how much I loved it. That's how much I loved being in Somali. And I want to know, how you guys feel about growing up here and never gotten to experience your own country?
So let me start off by saying, I grew up in Regent Park my whole entire life. Grew up on beef patties and peanut butter juice, if you know, you know. But I always had an inner Halima in me, an inner, because I love Somali music and I loved it as a kid. Mm. And I'll tell you why. My older siblings, we have a significant amount of years between us, right? So they when they already came to this country, they were already fobs. So I was living with fobs.
Yeah.
And when I say fobs, like, I'm not even gonna lie, they call themselves fobs too, because they spoke predominantly Somali, listened to predominantly Somali music, and they were not letting up. They had the culture down packed, because by the time they came to this country, they were in high school, 14, 15 years old, right? So I would say I had a different experience with being Somali Nimo. I had one leg in and one leg out, because in the daytime I'm out here with my Caribbean friends and doing the willy bounce all day, and then I'm going home. Yeah, and then I'm going home, and then my sisters are making asho, and Somali music is blasting. Adan Samatar, big ups, you know. So I felt like, wallahi, growing up, I had the best of both worlds. But I'm not gonna lie, in my late 20s, I leaned more to Hasan Adan Samatar.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And I think it's more because I started traveling to the UK. I went to Minnesota. Big up to my Minnesota people. Oh. That is, you don't know July 1st until you go to Minnesota. Yeah, and the streets.
I heard of some movie.
They lock off the street, man. Camel, Somali flag.
I heard of some movie.
Dempon, fam. Like, so I feel like I was always 1 foot in, 1 foot out. So I feel like I had a little Halima living inside of me.
I gotta give a big shout out to Minnesota. You guys are the leaders in the diaspora for the Somali community. Big shout outs.
We're doing things.
Whoa.
So for me, I feel like I came here and I didn't know the language. I came here at 5 years old not knowing English. So in my household, I'm growing up with my aunts, I'm hearing Somali music and Michael Jackson.
Yep.
You don't want to get you don't want to get me started with Michael Jackson. That's no, my guilty pleasure.
You know what? Yeah, come on. So we're listening to the King of Pop and Somali music.
Yeah.
That's all. And the house, there's always food cooking. So it's like once I'm in the house, I'm living in a little Somalia, right?
Yeah.
Like everything about the house, the oomph is on. You know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
The house is being cleaned. You know what I mean? Somali music is blasting. Your mom or your aunt in the kitchen dancing, making food. You know, it's a lively environment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they never miss a chance to tell you about Somalia.
Yep.
Yeah.
They never miss a chance.
Yeah.
Like,
they still do.
I can tell you right now, for everybody that's listening, if you walk around your house or go around your house, there is pictures of Somalia around your house.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful streets. It's beaches. It's the culture. You can live through a picture. They say a picture tells is a thousand words.
That's facts.
So when your parents get the chance, they're telling you. They're telling you about Somalia. They're telling you their experiences. They're telling you, I used to play on the beach every day. Mm. And you're in the snow. You're going like this. You scratch your head saying, damn. They was living better than us.
They definitely was.
You know what I mean?
Do you guys know that there used to be clubs in Somalia?
Absolutely. 100%. I seen a video on TikTok. They were turning up.
Are you?
Yeah.
Come on, you think this is a joke? Come on. Like, our parents, if you go right now to your house and you look through your parents, like, their photo albums,
yeah,
you'll see your mom, your dad, your aunt, your uncle, whoever it is, they were fashionistas.
Disco era.
They were. They had the fro going. Ooh. You know what I mean? The moms was wearing, you know, large pants and bell bottoms before we ever was.
Quick question. You grew up in Dixon, right?
Yeah.
And how long was that?
I lived in Dixon until about I was in the sixth grade, so I would say.
So you smelled unsi in the hallways and stuff.
Yeah.
So Somali nimo was.
Yeah, it was there like for you. I'm
it was
stepping.
Slapped in your face.
Yeah,
every
it's
time.
In the house, and then once you step out the house, it's there too. You're going outside.
Yeah.
Every hubby that knows you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so and so's kid.
Yeah.
So now you're saying, damn, like what? I can't even like. You can't make it the wrong move. Your mom already knows what happened. You come home.
Mm.
What'd you do today? What do you mean what I do? I did nothing. I play some hoops.
You didn't go to the store?
I'm like, who's telling you? Which lady? Yeah. She's I'm not telling you. And they'll never tell you their source. And it could be any lady that if you look in the eye, you don't know.
When I was younger, my mom used to, she used to always make anjera on Saturdays. But I like
don't
malawah.
Do it. Big like ups malawah. To malawah.
I love malawah.
I'm malawah gang.
Yeah.
Malawah gang.
What about you?
Honestly, it depends how I'm feeling for the day. Sometimes malawah could get a little bit on the sweet side for breakfast.
I
take malawah in the evening.
I got a sweet tooth.
Oh, okay.
All Somalis have a sweet tooth.
There's no wrong time for malawah.
I'll drink sugar.
There's no wrong time for malawah.
Double double does
like
not exist in a Somali household. It's afar.
Yeah.
Four sugars, four
cups. Yeah. 100%. 100%.
Oh, God.
I remember one time this older Somali guy asked me to go get him coffee. I'm not going to say who it is, but... He told me to put eight sugars in the coffee. Right?
No, he didn't.
What did the person at the drive-thru say to you? forget him.
Excuse me?
I heard of five sugars. I mean, one of my homies did that. And I'm not going to call you out too. Five. That was enough. I was like, okay, girl, you need to go. This is diabetes.
But like, imagine someone pulling up to a thing and saying, yeah, let me get eight sugars. I'm not lying to you. If I'm the person that works there, I'm saying... Are you going through something, sir?
I'm calling help.
Is everything okay at home?
Well, everything
blink twice if you need help.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, like, I'm not going to lie to you. Like, when I was younger, I was the shah guy. So, whenever the hubby is and all the aunts would come to my house to kick up and just kick it with my aunt, I didn't have sisters growing up. So, they put me in the kitchen and my aunt taught me how to make tea.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was the tea guy.
Don't be telling the world that you make tea.
No, I make tea. Come on.
And that
shit
hits. Smooth is smooth in all different places.
Come on now. You know the boy's versatile. Stop playing with me. Don't play with me.
Yeah.
So I had to learn that everybody likes their drinks different.
Yeah.
There's some aunts that are coming that are saying, give me four sugars. There's some habaneros that are coming saying, I like mine black.
Yeah.
Some are saying, yo, add milk until it's white.
Yeah.
I'm saying it's no longer tea. She's saying it's still tea.
Contact.
You know, yeah. Then they're saying, yo, heat that up. I'm saying, I just got it off. What do you mean heat it? There's no more heat left.
Yeah.
No, they're saying it's not hot enough. I'm saying, are you guys crazy? Do you guys not have taste buds? Like, what's going on?
I never understood that.
Yeah, like...
So let's move forward. What are some of the stereotypes of Somalis? Negative and positive.
No problem. Big ass heads.
The forehead, right?
The forehead.
We all got that.
We call it the five head sometimes.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. They had no problem making jokes and all of that. Mm-hmm. Skinny. The Somali boys mm-hmm. are walking sticks.
Yeah.
Like, it's like they wondered if our parents fed us. Yes, our parents fed us. We just had a very high metabolism. I'm speaking for all my skinny niggas. It's me. I get it. I was that guy. They asked me if I ate. My mom and my aunts made sure I ate every day. It's yeah. not my fault. If I walk, I lose some pounds. That's not me. That's God.
Yeah.
You feel me?
Somalis just across the world are doing great things. You'll see a lot of Somalis growing successful businesses. You'll see Somalis in industries across the world. I even seen the city planner in Los Angeles is Somali. Did you guys know that?
No.
Well,
did not know that at all.
They always drop facts like that.
I read about it. Shout out to whoever that is.
I feel like we should spotlight positive side of the Somali community.
Absolutely.
And I think Bella with two L's has somebody for double us L's. Today.
Drum roll. All right, I feel like this spotlight is very important, especially for the climate, what's happening in our community now. A lot of negativity has been put in the community nowadays, and I feel like there's a lot of things that are being overlooked and a lot of good things coming out of the Somali community. And so the person that I chose for the Somali spotlight in our first very episode is somebody that's special to my heart. She goes by the Baking Soda.
Hard name.
Pronounced like S-O-D-A, like a soda. Get it? I actually loved it when I heard it. I was like, girl, what's wrong with it? Because that is an amazing, amazing name. She is a graduate at George Brown College, and she graduated class of 2019 for baking and pastry.
Shout out to her.
She does a lot of her business is actually based out of her home, and she does events like bridal parties, showers, anything you name it. Her cakes are to die for. And I'm actually gonna bring some one day so you guys could actually try it. The reason why I chose her is because she's been getting a lot of buzz in the community. She is very professional. Everything is always on time, and obviously with Somali people we have this impression that we're always late with our things, but she is breaking a lot of barriers on that. And the Baking Soda, her real name is Soda Adden. I just wanted to give you a shout out, Soda.
Shout out to Soda. You know what time it is.
Another highlight, she actually went for a pitch contest, so she had to pitch her business in front of a panel in 2019, and she actually came third place in the GTA, winning $2,500. So our Somali sister, you are our very first spotlight, and you guys can find her at The Baking Soda on Instagram for all your baking inquiries. And yeah, you guys, she's amazing. Her cupcakes are to die for.
Okay, so Baking Soda, I'm not gonna lie to you, you don't have to hit us up. We're gonna have to try your products. We're gonna support your business. But you know, sometimes, you know, throw a little one too, you feel me? Man, I'm trying to get a taste, you know, we like the desserts. Over here, we like it. So shout out to you and everything that you're doing. Just know that you may feel like nobody's watching, but we're going to get the world to watch you. Don't worry. We got you.
You know, do you mind me asking what school she went to?
George Brown College.
She took culinary arts at George Brown?
She sure did.
That's special because George Brown is top 10 schools in North America. For culinary arts, so she's got that wrist work.
So ladies, just so you know, cooking is a career.
Absolutely.
It could be a career, don't look at it as a chore, there are benefits to it. Don't always look at it as a job. Like, don't look at it as a chore. It could be a job, it could be a career. We got our young sister here doing things. Shout out to you.
Yeah.
We respect
you. Make sure you guys follow her on all her socials.
All her socials, you know.
And it's very hard starting a business in a climate like this. I think she's fairly new. I think it's within the last 2-3 years I've heard of her. I've met her in person a lot in some Islamic settings, like halakas and stuff. And she's a very vibrant young lady. And I don't want to sound biased because I could go on and on about Soda all day. But yeah, she's amazing. You guys need to check her out.
Definitely.
I told you, we like sweets over here. We like sweets. Yeah. So don't worry, we're going to check you out.
With the sweet too.
And yeah. Don't forget us. Don't forget us. You know what I mean? Don't forget the unfinished. Slide a little one too.
I feel like the younger generation has an entrepreneurial spirit that I never had, and a lot of people who are a little older didn't have. And I gotta give a big shout outs to you guys. You guys, I feel like, are smarter than me. Yeah. You guys
have a little better time than me. Yeah.
You guys are a little bit more sensitive, but you guys have a lot more than
I They do. And I have this thing, again, it's the Somali in me. Once I see an avenue, or once I see a business that I would want to use, like bridal showers and all these events that we have as women, or even males, but more so women's, like we like these catering companies. Once I see a Somali sister doing her thing, like I have to, that has to be my go-to. And I don't want it to be like, oh, we're trying to be selective with where our money goes, but sometimes we need to for our people to prosper.
Yeah.
Well, that's very important. As from when I met that girl, just knowing her for the past 1-2 years or so or less, I've always went to her for my family events. It's just, it's my go-to. There's another sister, but we'll talk about her on another episode of Spotlight. It's important for us to make sure that our people prosper, especially in a time like this, a climate where all the storefronts are closed. There was talks of like businesses going that are closing. They're going bankrupt and stuff like that. And it's in our best interest to make sure that we are a helping hand in these businesses, in these small businesses in times like this, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
It falls
also, you
on our shoulders.
Support black business.
Absolutely.
Support all black business.
Absolutely.
Somalis, yes, we are black.
Absolutely.
Support black business.
No, absolutely.
We will support everybody. We got you.
Yeah. So, I feel like being Somali is entwined with being nomadic. And I wanted to segue into the last part of this podcast, where we try to give a little bit of a reminder, because every time that we do have more than one or two people around, we should be remembered of our Lord, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And we're going to go every single week, hopefully. We will be bringing to you a story or a hadith that's related to whatever subject that we do speak about. And I'm going to let Bella go from here.
Hey, guys. So whatever I say that's wrong is from the shaitan. And anything that I say that benefits you is from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and His Messenger. So the hadith I chose today sits well with not only the idea of being Somali, but the idea of being Somali in the Western society. It is narrated on the authority of Abu Huraira that the Messenger of Allah said, "Islam initiated as something strange, and it would revert to its old position of being strange. So give glad tidings to the strangers." So in this day and age, it's easy to be like everyone else and fit in. It takes no effort at all, in my opinion, because everything is geared to fitting in. But to go against the trend and adopt and stay true to our code and customs is a reflection of how strong we are as an ummah. The saying goes, only dead fish go with the flow. And it's true, because spiritually dead heart is one that indulges in society's norm, even when it is against our cultural and religious norms. I feel like this hadith fits well with me, not only being Somali, but being Somali, Muslim, and growing in the West. For a long time, I felt like a stranger around my peers, because I was not only black enough. Sometimes they had religious customs that weren't of a norm to my own customs. And it's okay to kind of feel like a stranger sometimes, because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala already gave us this guarantee of success, to be confident of who we are and to know that the believing person is always on the side of success.
That's beautiful. That's very, very beautiful. And I definitely agree with you. It's okay to be strange. You should be different. You should be comfortable with people looking at you weird when you say stuff, because that's going to happen. That's life. You're going to rub people the wrong way. That is life. You're going to upset people. That is life. And you can only control one thing, and that's your words and your actions. And we are travelers in this world.
The word is Qurba, the stranger one.
The stranger one, Qurba.
Yeah. Qurba, the strangers, yeah. And Allah literally says we are the strangers. Yeah. And you're going to feel that along your livelihood, your teenage years, your adulthood, from something simple as not being able to celebrate Halloween, to something as great as the profession that you choose in life. Every single thing goes around the aspect of our religion.
Definitely. Allah perfected Islam for us that it would be effective and throughout time. So you got to remember that regardless of what you're going through in life, you will have challenges. Every single person will face hardships. Every person will face blessings. But me personally, I feel as though the more hardships you face in life, the greater the blessing is. Not the other way around. Blessings are hardships, because blessings blind you. Hardships make you stronger.
I always heard that if you read the Quran and you contemplate over it, your story is in there somewhere. Definitely. And that always resonated with me through all my hardships. Your story is in there somewhere.
100%. You know, like the most beautiful thing about the Quran, every prophet in history was giving a miracle. And Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam's blessing was the Quran. And every single time you read that Quran throughout the time in your life, it will mean something different to you. That's the beauty of the Quran. And special, you know. And
just to reflect.
Just to reflect.
A lot of the times there's the reinstating notion of, are these people not reflecting? Do they not contemplate?
Do they not think?
Do they not have aqal, you know? So a lot of the times we just take time and reflect. Our stories in there.
Definitely. And like I contemplate this all the time. The first verse that was revealed to Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam was
Iqra,
read. And it really resonates with me on a different level, because when the Quran was released in the world changed, because it gave us a different types of governance that didn't exist before that. Before, the world was governed by kingships. After the Quran, the people govern themselves. And I want to let you guys know that life is about learning, and we will make mistakes in this world. I will say stuff that that will be wrong. I will have opinions that are wrong, but I'm comfortable being wrong, and I'm comfortable failing. And I feel like you, both of you guys, are in the same position.
We're only human. We're not perfect. Yeah. We're just here as flawed humans.
We're just ordinary people.
We don't know which way to go. But go up on the haq, okay? That's where we're all striving to go. The
always
haq.
Always, always.
And feeling happy and being Somali, you guys. Whoever's celebrating your birthday, happy birthday to you one more time.
Shout out to you.
Gotta love it.
Shout out to Michael Jackson. Was the only person, only music that wasn't like looked down upon.
You know, I feel like every Somali, like it doesn't matter, everybody in the world knows at least two Michael Jackson songs. Michael Jackson was not huge.
Your
Michael Jackson and Maria LaBlage. That's Mary J. Blige in the Somali name.
You like Mary?
I used to love Mary growing up. I grew up around a lot of aunts, so my aunts used to like it. But I'm saying they used to call her Maria LaBlage. But I used to always tell them it's Mary J. Blige. What Maria LaBlage
no get? Come on, man. You know Somalis, man.
You guys,
Somalis, their pronunciation is totally different.
I'm going to tell you guys something, but don't judge me.
Okay.
Don't
do it.
Every time my family or friends, we would go to karaoke, there's only one song that I would sing. And
Mariah Carey Fantasy?
No.
I Will Always Love You by Whitney Houston?
No.
What?
It's Mary J. Blige, Not Gonna Cry.
Are you crazy?
That's my favorite song of all time.
That is an anthem.
It's weird, right?
No, it's not weird at all. People love that song.
It's the most passionate song, yeah.
Absolutely passionate. It goes. It pierces the heart. That one.
That's you guys.
That's my jab.
That's you guys. me and group on the gangster era. My stuff in Dipset.
Put on
some Dipset. I'll wrap it up.
I'm with you on that one. Oh God.
Before we close up the episode, I wanted to go into a little bit about the next episode, because we're going to be talking about something interesting. We're going to be talking about, is beauty enough?
Do we wear makeup for men, or do we wear it for ourselves?
Me personally, you want to hear my opinion?
Yes.
I think women are in constant competition with each other.
You got some. You're going somewhere with this.
I think it's more of a. It's.
I got a war to pick with the male species when it comes to makeup, and I'm ready for it.
Why? What's going on? I don't know if I'm ready.
Because
for
I think.
I think I'm ready.
I think they think that we don't love ourselves with or without makeup, but I believe the males don't even know when we're wearing makeup and when we're not.
It's because men don't care.
Absolutely.
That's the main point there is that once you come out that house, however you look,
don't matter.
We're okay with.
Don't matter.
We're okay with it. But you know what it is?
We're created this.
But you know what it is?
Find out next time in Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah. We're going to get more deep into it next time, but just know that.
We do not wear makeup for you guys.
You guys are not
going
to like some of the things.
This is going
to
be a deep
call. That Smooth has to say.
Yeah.
But guess what? I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
And Bella with two L's will be defending the female population.
And don't worry, there will be times where I'm defending them as well. But guess what? Next week, we're gonna have some fun.
We're gonna have a lot of fun next week. Stay tuned, and I hope you guys have a great birthday party.
What? The greatest.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Make sure you play some
holiday.
Holiday.
You know what I mean? Get the holiday.
No, for real though. We're wishing you guys a happy new year with a lot of blessings and buttercup that comes your way this year.
Yeah.
We've had a really hard and hardship testing year in 2020, and may Allah open a lot of doors for you guys and ours, and let's get it.
Yeah, and let us outside. Let us go outside. 2021, please let us go outside.
Yeah, and last thing before I go, just like Bella said earlier, anything good that came from us came from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and anything bad that came from us came from the error in us.
Absolutely.
Yes. Take care, guys.
Woo!